Dose of Leadership Podcast, episode 160.
Welcome to another episode of the Dose of Leadership Podcast, the show that brings you inspiring and educational interviews with today's most relevant and motivating leaders. Each episode is dedicated to highlight real-life leadership and influence experts who dedicate their lives to the pursuit of the truth, common sense, and courageous leadership. And now, here's your host, Richard Ryerson.
Hey, welcome to the show. This is Richard Ryerson. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. As always, I appreciate your support and the feedback. I'm glad you're tuning in. Hey, I'm launching something very soon. I'm very close to finishing my long-awaited Becoming a Leader course, and it's a membership site too. I've been working on this for about 4 months, and I'm finally about to wrap it up. I'm going to be releasing this in mid-August 2014. The course is entirely focused on how to increase your influence and become a relevant, purposeful leader in today's unique environment. I'm going to have access to over 30 leadership training videos and weekly live mastermind sessions. I'm also going to be having guests on a monthly basis, guests from this show going to be joining us in those mastermind sessions. I'm going to cover in this course all there is to know about increasing your influence, your command presence, and learning how to become calm, confident, consistent, and courageous in every aspect of your life. However, I need your help. So all you listeners out there, before I finalize everything and open the site, I need to make sure I've covered everything, and that's where you come in. So please take a few minutes, go to doseofleadership.com and click on the Becoming a Leader menu item, and there you'll be guided to a survey where you can answer two questions, your top two questions about influence and becoming a leader that I absolutely need to cover in this course. So please give me your help, and if you're interested in this course, you can find out more info at going to doseofleadership.com and click on the Becoming a Leader menu item. Again, thanks so much for your support, and here's the interview. Well, I'm so excited to have on my show today Mark Devine. He's an expert in human performance that is displayed in mental toughness, leadership, and physical readiness. His work is based on an integral warrior leader model that he developed and tested on over 1,000 special operation candidates worldwide. This integrated training, which involves physical, mental, emotional, intuitional, and spiritual training, has resulted in over 90% success rate for the Spec Ops candidates. It's now taught to executives and corporate teams, top sports teams, top athletes, professionals, first responders, and warriors from all walks of life. He's the founder and leader of several highly successful enterprises, including SEAL Fit, which is all about physical and mental training, Unbeatable LLC, which is executive mastery development, NavySEALs.com, and US CrossFit. He also co-founded the Coronado Brewing Company in Coronado, California. Wow. He's the author of four books, the latest one's Way of the SEAL, published by Reader's Digest Publishing, Eight Weeks to SEAL Fit, Unbeatable Mind, and SEAL Fit Training Guide, and he is a retired 20 years with the United States Navy as a SEAL. Mark, welcome to the Dose of Leadership Podcast.
Thank you, Richard.
Well, the listeners don't know this, but this is our third time we've tried to record this. We're having all kinds of technical difficulties. But
how many military officers does it take?
To do a recording, absolutely. Well, guys, you know, we were talking earlier, and I had Rourke Denver on the show months ago, and I love talking with military members, Navy SEALs particularly, and as in the Marine Corps, I always enjoyed working with you guys. It was always a fun and interesting experience, and the first time I had, you know, I remember doing this briefing in Kuwait, and we're getting ready to do some halo drops, and that was the first time we were standing here in the desert, you know, on the tarmac at Ali Asalim Air Base and talking about what we're going to do, and I just remember looking at this group of individuals, and I'm like, this is not the picture of the SEALs that I had in mind. And it was a positive experience because I had the Adonis over there. I also had this kind of small, quirky guy. I think he even had a pierced tongue, which was kind of crazy. And I think, you know, some of these guys would never, you would think they would be a SEAL if you saw them walking in the street. And I just thought that was so great.
Yeah, I was totally appreciate that. And, you know, a lot of people have said that same thing to me. And it reminds me actually of Admiral McCraven just did a commencement speech at the University of Texas. Admiral McCraven was my old sea daddy, commanding officer SEAL Team 3. And anyways, in this speech, you know, he talked about his the boat crew at his BUDS class, which they called the Munchkins, which were all these little short guys.
Right.
And how the Munchkins, you know, came from all walks of life and they were all different colors. And the really defining thing that allowed them or let them, you know, be called the Munchkins was that they were all short. But, you know, his story goes on to say that these guys really kind of kicked ass and took names and, you know, were far, you know, had a far more kind of warrior slash non-quitting spirit than a lot of the other students. And so his message was, you know, don't judge a person by the size of their flippers, but by the size of their heart.
Yeah.
And that really kind of sums up your point, is that SEALs, you know, it's not the physical aspect. There are a lot of, you know, everyone who comes into training is a physical stud at some level, because that's, you know, one of the main requirements of being a SEAL. But it's not what defines those who succeed through the training and then into the SEALs. It's really the size of your heart and your willingness to just go the distance, your mental toughness, your emotional resiliency.
Yeah, that is so true. You know, I just have, I gave a presentation this morning and we were talking about that exact point, and it kind of ties into what you're talking about. You know, talent is a given. I think we put so much emphasis on talent. I'm sure, like you said, you're going through that training and there are probably guys in there who absolutely meet the requirements and probably exceed it, but they wash out even on the first day because they just don't have the mental and the character and the heart to do it, right?
That's so true. And oftentimes the most talented guys are the first to quit because throughout life things came easy for them and they were coddled and they were, you know, treated like all-stars, you know, like the all-star football quarterback. And they never really were pushed to a wall. They never failed and they never learned how to get up, you know, fall down seven times and get up eight, you know, which is one of my favorite expressions from my old martial arts studio. And, you know, that those are the qualities that make good SEALs and actually lead to long-term success in life.
So is that something that can be taught? I mean, this is interesting to me that you've got this program. I mean, can you teach character and heart? I mean, what is, I mean, it's obviously it's a choice. I mean, it is a choice, sure. But what, I mean, is that something that can eventually be taught to somebody?
Sure. Absolutely. You know, it's kind of like saying leadership. Can leadership be taught?
Yeah,
And you already identified the first prerequisite is, you know, you have to desire to grow and to be a leader. You have to desire, right, and to grow your mental fortitude and your emotional resiliency. You know, without that desire, then can't help you, right? Until some major cataclysmic event comes along that may be life or death or survival situation, and then you're kind of back to a wall. But and so at the highest level, you have to look at it and say, okay, can mental toughness be taught? Yes, to those who desire it. What percentage of our population or human populations desire that at such a level that they're going to go take the actions necessary to develop it and train it? You know, pretty small percentage, I would say. And so in that regard, you can almost make the counter argument that for the vast majority of the population, because the desire to do the work isn't there, then it can't be taught. But if the desire is there, it absolutely can be taught. And that's one of the things that has been the focus of my work for the past 10 years is to really figure out how to teach. How do you teach mental toughness? How do you teach emotional resiliency? How do you teach warrior spirit? And we've done an exceptional job of kind of figuring that out and doing it in our SEAL Fit Academies, in our 50-hour mental toughness camp, which is modeled off of SEAL Week or SEAL Hell Week. And the results have been pretty remarkable. So, yeah, it definitely can be taught for those who are, you know, really self-motivated.
You know, tied in with that, I'm curious to see kind of your perspective on this. I have and it's really come clear to me at the more removed I have come from the Marine Corps. But, you know, a lot of people in the perceptions, and even when I give presentations and everybody thinks it's about the short haircuts, it's the screaming, the testosterone, the larger-than-life egos. And to some element on the surface, some of that is true. But I would argue that I have never been involved with a more creative or even loving an organization that emanates love than the Marine Corps. And I would imagine that the SEALs, it's even 10 times that, I would imagine. Does any of that resonate with you?
Oh, absolutely. I totally I mean, I concur. You know, I often use that term love in the context of elite teams because, you know, the Marines have this, not all Marines are much bigger than SEALs, 140,000 or whatever it is, today, but in the SEALs, there's only like 1,850 of us.
Yeah,
and it was a lot smaller when I was active duty, you know, it was about half of that. And so, you know, it's like a really small college and but you're going to school with people that you literally are sweating and bleeding with every day, you know, instead of sitting in a classroom and doing extremely risky things. And so you learn to develop this unbelievable level of trust and mutual respect, which, you know, if we had a word for it, would very closely resemble love.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the Greeks have a word for it because they have like 18 different words for love. It's just the English language kind of fails us there.
Yeah.
But there's no question that the love I feel for my immediate teammates, you know, that I went to combat with and did, you know, intense missions with at SEAL Team 3 and SDV Team 1, you know, those teammates I'm closer to than my own filial, you know, brothers and sisters in a lot of ways.
Right.
You know, and I'm not saying that to put anyone down or, you know, I love my brothers and sisters, obviously, very deeply, but there's a different level of, you know, connection that goes on when men and women are in, you know, in harm's way and have each other's back and rely on each other for their lives.
You know, I love that you said that. I think back to even, you know, and I look at my corporate professional career and I think back to people, you know, there's some people you like and some people you don't like, but I even remember people that we would just drive me crazy in the Marine Corps and that you would even kind of maybe even go toe-to-toe or even to blows with or even fisticuffs at sometimes. If that person called me today, the person that drove me the most crazy in the Marine Corps, if they called me today and asked for $1,000, I would never hesitate to give it to them. Does that make sense? I can't replicate that with some of my civilian counterparts. And that's not to put down the civilian sector. It's not. But that just struck that when you said that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it goes to that level of trust that it can only be developed when you share a risk, and especially in the military environment where the risk is so high, then that trust bond just gets grooved deeper and deeper. And so to be, you know, to feel that trust, you have to be trustworthy, right? That's two sides of the coin. Trust is the external display that's felt by the other party, but it's trustworthiness that creates that bond, you know, that you have developed. And trustworthiness is one of those character traits that I mentioned in our first attempt at this call that leads to depth of character and the ability to lead people, right? And so, you know, my whole view of leadership is that it's an authentic relationship between human beings that is forged through developing trust, you know, honesty and professional respect. And it's done daily, right? And then it's proven in the fire. But the firefight, you know, or the intense situation is really just kind of the test where it's all, you know, all the relationship building and the character that you develop day by day, day in and day out through the daily effort is, you know, is put under pressure. And hopefully you come through that even stronger and you don't break. And if you do break, you know, you find out what your weaknesses are and you work to shore them up.
For sure. So that begs the question then. I mean, obviously in that type of extreme environment, it's easy to understand why those bonds would be forged.
Sure.
So is it harder? I mean, is that something we can replicate in the civilian sector? I mean, and if so, is it more difficult, do you think?
Well, yes, it can be replicated, and yes, it's more difficult. And the way I do it is to simulate some of the conditions that existed for us in the military. There's two primary ways that we develop character. One, and I've already alluded to these, one is through daily effort, right? And the yogis would call this tapas. Tapas is burning off lethargy, you know, if from the physical development standpoint. Lethargy is burning off, tapas is burning off mental sloth or lack of ability to focus and concentrate. And so we develop those skills on the mental plane. And every day we can develop a more emotional connection, deeper emotional awareness and resiliency so that we can get up, you know, seven times when we're kicked in the balls six. And so those are, you know, those things we do every day to make ourselves better, to try to get 1% better every day. And then rather than, you know, in the SEALs as well as the Marines, rather than waiting for the firefight to test us, we test ourselves in simulated, extremely real firefights, extremely real combat, you know, missions where, you know, the conditions are almost the same, but obviously the risk is more perceived than real because we're not trying to kill each other. And so through that, those trials by fire, which I call crucible experiences, that's when we really, really test the level of development that has occurred through the daily training. And so, you know, what I'm alluding to is that the way that I train mental toughness, emotional resiliency, warrior spirit is by giving the trainees, whether it's a corporate executive or a spec ops candidate, the tools to do the daily work and to do that in an integrated manner in that, you know, as you and I know that the human beings develop, you know, as whole people. You know, that's one of the beauties of the military model. It's like we don't divorce mental training from physical training. And we don't divorce, you know, emotional development from the mental training. It's like it's all got to happen together.
Yeah.
And so I give people the tools to develop themselves in what I call five mountains of, you know, five capacities. I call them five mountains, and they are physical, mental, emotional, intuitional, and spiritual. And I use the word kokoro for that last, for the spirit. Kokoro is a Japanese word. Again, another example of where the English language fails us. It's a Japanese word that means to merge your heart and your mind into your actions, not to just try to think your way through things, right? Heart holds the wisdom, the mind holds the cleverness, right? And so that kokoro spirit is the realm of intention, you know, non-quitting, you know, spirit, that deep love for your teammate that's going to, you know, have you jump on the grenade to save their life, that type of thing. So we want to develop daily through these five mountains and integrate them so that we're not growing as, you know, kind of lopsided human beings. But then we test it. We test it through crucible experiences, such as this 50-hour nonstop training event that I alluded to for Kokoro Camp, or we have a 12-hour nonstop training event for executives, or, you know, anyone willing to go that level. For sports teams, you know, I've got a 6-hour version, you know, we just did for the University of South Alabama, which takes the athletes through 6 hours of pretty grueling, you know, both individual and team development, and takes them way out of their comfort zone, way out of their comfort zone. So these, you know, these tests then really break people, not, doesn't break their spirit, but breaks their paradigms about what they're capable of. And I think a lot of people have this jilted view of what that military training, that intense training is all about. And I think you alluded to this earlier. They think it's all about, you know, being, you know, just beating someone down. And that's not true. We don't try to beat people down. We try to build people up. But in order for them to understand where they need to grow, and for our coaches to understand where someone needs to learn and grow, then we've got to expose their weaknesses. And the way we expose their weaknesses is through this intense experience that includes sleep deprivation and cold water, and very, very talented instructors who, you know how to get under your skin emotionally. And sure, to the outsider, that guy might be shouting at, you know, shouting conflicting instructions to them while he's spraying water on them. You know, and, you know, there might be smoke going off and machine gun fire. But the reality is what we're trying to do is get them to focus on the right commands and to focus internally on getting control of their mind so they can make good decisions in that chaotic and high-pressure situation. And now, again, translate this just to the business environment. How powerful would that be, you know, especially since the stress is not bullets coming at you, but, you know, really is only about losing, you know, maybe potentially losing a business deal or market share. So the risks aren't as high, but the, you know, the cacophony in the minds and the inability to maintain focus and, you know, the fear and all these things still exist for the business leader every much as they did or do for the military operator. So these tools tend to be extremely valuable.
Yeah, I can imagine. I love that. And, you know, the whole idea, you know, and you're absolutely right. I mean, the chaos and the uncertainty and the fear, those are things. And when somebody understands, especially in the civilian sector, that that never goes away, that that's the norm, that is such a kind of a freeing moment. Because just like you said, in that chaotic environment, that's just the that's what we do, and people don't equate the two, that it could apply to business. But I don't care if you're making plastic bird feeders or wind chimes, importing them from China, or if you're doing flight tests, if you're, you know, whatever, you're making dog food, all of it's chaotic. I don't care what anybody says. It's chaotic.
Oh, for sure. Business is organized chaos. Yeah. And guess what? Our economy is organized chaos, and the chaos is speeding up and getting more chaotic, right? And everybody knows that. There's plenty of HBS articles on how the pace of technological innovation and whatnot is leading to an acceleration of change. You know, we know that. And so, you know, I feel like the business leadership community has to upgrade their mental operating system to be able to keep pace, right?
Yeah.
And so the model that I use is extremely powerful, because SEALs and Spec Ops, you know, they had to do this basically to learn how to navigate the extreme fast pace and chaos of a combat environment and make good decisions and come out on top every time. And wow, you know, how relevant that is to today's business leader.
Oh my gosh,
and it will be for the next 20 years or more.
You know, I would argue that decision making, or the lack of people unwilling to make decision making with partial information, is probably the biggest weakness I've seen in the corporate environment. What is your take on that?
I think in large corporate bureaucratic systems, that is probably one of the biggest weaknesses. And it stems from a lot of different things, you know, groupthink and the inability of people to really speak their minds and their hearts because of political correctness and fear of reprisal and fear of, you know, offending, you know, someone who happens to be maybe a protected minority class. You know, and the SEALs and the Marines, we didn't have to worry about that.
No.
You know, it didn't matter what color you were. Yep. If you fucked up, you got called out.
That's right.
And it was all done in the spirit of, hey, we're going to make this team better, and we can't make the team better unless you step up to the plate and make yourself better. And so let's get with the program. Right. And if you do it a second time, we'll work with you, you know, even harder. If you do it a third time, sorry, you're obviously not coachable and you're going to have to leave the team. But, you know, the corporate world has a difficult time having those conversations.
And, I know.
You know, that's one of the things I try to teach is that you've got to have those conversations. You've got to be willing to be vulnerable. You've got to be willing to get your egos, you know, bruised. And these brutally honest conversations lead to extraordinary breakthroughs, you know, and people grow stronger and the team grows more resilient. When you stop tiptoeing around everything, every issue and everyone as if you're on a bunch of eggshells.
You know, that is such a – I love the point that you brought up about the brutal conversations. And that's one thing that I can't remember who I was talking with about this a month ago. So someone asked me what is the biggest thing that I miss or that you wish would have carried over. And it was that brutal honesty and that not fearing or worrying about – hurting somebody's feelings, because you had to have thick skin anyway, and there was a lot to be said for that, you know. And I think it's that mindset of being brutally honest about what we're trying to do. There's an expectation when you're in the Marine Corps to not be that way, and so and if you were on it, you were called upon it, and it's that kind of mindset of being, okay, these are our expectations of professionalism. I'm going to call you on the carpet if you're not being professional, I guess is what I'm trying to get at.
For sure. Well, and you can't even call someone the carpet in most bureaucratic organizations for not doing their job.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Because not doing your job is the norm, or at least not working hard is the norm, and sucking off the system. And I know that everyone's that way, right? Again, you know, someone listening to this working for, you know, NASA or something, be like, come on, Devine, you know, give me a break. There's some incredibly talented people in all government arenas. But as a general rule, the industrial age bureaucracy, you know, it does not reward, you know, extreme levels of performance. And you know, the Peter Principle is at play there in a big way. And it's very difficult to have, you know, breakthrough results and innovative change and self-organizing teams and all these things that are creating the Googles of the world in the business sector in that environment. And so I think, you know, there's this huge sea change that needs to happen in our bureaucratic systems. And it's a reason why there's such resistance to some of the new technology, some of the changes that are being, you know, experienced in the private sector. And wow, you know, it's like, it's almost, you know, I heard Newt Gingrich say this, and I really align with it, but he said that the bureaucrats are the prison guards to the entrepreneurs who are creating the new world order, essentially. I hate to use that term, but the new way things are going to be done in the next 10 or 20 years, where all these, you know, advanced and accelerating technologies are converging to create an entirely new way of organizing government, organizing business, and organizing our private lives. And, you know, the bureaucrats are standing in the way, and it's kind of a race to see who wins, right?
That's right.
So whether the bureaucrats can prevent the technology and the innovation, or the entrepreneurs can get it out there soon enough.
Yeah, so much of what you're saying is resonating with me, and I love everything you're saying. You know, one thing that I don't know why I came across this so late, because I've been a Stephen Pressfield fan for so long, you know, obviously, but I just recently, just this week, and I'm not even finished with it, I started reading the War of Art. I don't know if you're familiar with it or if you've even read it.
I've read it, it's a great book. I love Stephen's work.
Yeah, he's awesome, isn't he? And I saw him on TV. He was actually getting interviewed by Oprah, of all things, and he was talking about the War of Art, and that's when I said, gosh, I've been meaning to get myself familiar with it, and I finally did, and I'm so glad I did, because it talks about everything you're kind of hinting to about this. And it is almost liberating, too, to understand that every time that we, you know, our biggest enemy is ourselves, it's our mind, it's the things, the self-talk, the negative self-talk that we do. And the more and the bigger our dream and the creative process, whatever we're trying to do, it's just a natural force that resistance is going to prevent us. It's almost a given. And once you understand that it's always there, then you can slay that dragon head on. And for me, that was kind of a liberating experience. And I suppose a lot of what's involved in your training and trying to get people to get mentally tough deals with that resistance that's inevitably going to be there, right?
For sure, yeah. And there's we definitely want to give people the ability to be in complete control of their script, right? And so I like to say that we become, through the training, you become the author of your life, and you're writing the script moment to moment. Now you have a vision,
right,
for what the book, how the book ends, right?
Yep.
And I literally have my students write their epitaph from the perspective of their best friend who understands them intimately, knows their heart, knows their purpose and value, you know, for being on the planet, and knows how they impacted the world in a profound way. And so I have them write literally as if they were on their deathbed or had passed away, what their impact to the world was. And so that, you know, that starts the process of developing an incredible vision for your life and how that, you know, the trajectory should unfold. And then, you know, I teach them to become brutally focused on the present and to execute, you know, with very, very clear, concise, and focused goals, and to narrow their focus on to just a very, very narrow range of very important or the most important goals and projects, so that they can, you know, be more, their mind is more focused like a laser beam instead of diffused like a floodlight. And this is in addition to the ability to control the clutter in their mind or declutter their mind to control their, you know, the thinking process, so they can tap into their creative and intuitive subconscious minds, and to develop emotional resiliency, like I alluded to earlier, so they don't, you know, get sidetracked by, you know, rutted patterns of emotion that may have been planted there earlier on in life, or any kind of belief systems that come and trip them up. And so all these, you know, different aspects of what, you know, would you could classify as mental toughness is actually, you know, pretty broad. We try to bring them together and use them to unlock potential and to accelerate performance.
I got to tell you, that is my biggest struggle. It always has been. And even today, I gave a presentation this morning, and I kind of, in my mind, flubbed up a certain part at the beginning. At the end of the day, it would, you know, an outsider said it was all great and outstanding. But I, for 3 to 4 hours, all I did internally was beat myself up. Why do we do that? It just drives me crazy.
You know, it's because we just obsess about stuff in the past, or we you know, dream about things in the future. And it's a skill to be able to be able to use our minds very effectively for future thinking and past thinking. And so an effective thing for you to do in the future, you know, not future thinking, but in the future, next time this happens, is to really just analyze the situation and then to quickly find the silver lining, the lesson, right, that is hidden within the situation or the circumstance that you weren't happy with. And once you find that lesson, then you write it down or commit to improving that aspect of how you do things in the future, and then let it go. Just completely let it go. Forgive yourself for whatever fuck up, and realize that everything happens for a purpose and that you're grateful for this happening, and establish a positive relationship to it, and then let it go and just move on.
Yeah.
You know, redirect your mind to the next positive thing. And so, you know, the way we want to use our mind for past thinking, past orientation, is to process and find the silver lining so that you can have a positive orientation to those situations that happened in our past, rather than carry that negative baggage along. Like we have a saying, you know, Seal Fit, that it's better to live a life of discipline than a life of regret.
Yeah.
And so this is a disciplined process that we go through that I call recapitulation, that allows you to be, you know, rectified with anything that happens in your past, so that you're not carrying that baggage along like a kettlebell going forward.
You know, I suppose a lot of it, and I'm excited to read this, The Way of the Seal, and I'm sure that a lot of what you've talked about includes the exercises, the meditations,
sure,
the focusing techniques to train our mind, right? That's what the book's about?
That's what the book's about, yeah. The book came out of my Unbeatable Mind training program, which is really the mental, emotional, intuitive, and spiritual training that I do for the Spec Ops candidates at Seal Fit. And I just wanted to be able to offer it to a much broader audience, you know, because I realize that, you know, Spec Ops candidates are a pretty small percentage of the human population.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've got all of this information is in there, and I've got tons of trainings and drills and, you know, visualizations and breathing, you know, techniques and stuff like that. It's very, very rich with, you know, how to do this, how to do this training for yourself and to some extent for your team.
Man, I am excited to get this because it seems like it's a practical guide for anyone that kind of wants to step into the elite realm. And I talk about that on the show a lot, that we are just bathing in mediocrity. And I think all of us should be challenged to kind of to break through those chains and try to get ourselves into the elite status, to become pros, because I think a lot of us are really kind of sitting on the fence of being a pro and an amateur. And I think we should push ourselves to become elite.
I agree. And I think it's within everyone's potential. You know, I kind of start off my training by saying, hey, we're capable of 20 times more than we think we are, or that we lead ourselves to believe we are. So the question then, if you accept that premise, I call it 20X factor, is how do we unlock that potential? And then, you know, the training starts from there.
Well, gosh, Mark, I'm so glad to have met you. I mean, Chris Brogan introduced us, and I mean, you're a fantastic guest, and I love what you're doing. I'm excited to get this book myself. How can people get in touch with you and find out more about you?
Right on. Well, the Way of the Seal is the leadership book that we've been talking about. That's available anywhere books are sold, like Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And, of course, at our own, you know, internal store at SealFit. And then, you know, for there's a couple places on the web that you can find more information. The primary one is sealfit.com, all one word, SEALFIT.com. And, you know, we have information about the books there. We have tons and tons of amazingly inspiring videos. We have an online training program. And also the Unbeatable Mind training program can be found there. And then, you know, at unbeatablemind.com, there's more information about my other book called Unbeatable Mind, which is really the philosophy underpinning it. So whereas Way of the Seal is kind of like the training manual for leaders, Unbeatable Mind is like my philosophy of success. And there is some overlap, but it's a very, very different book. And that one I self-published. And if someone, you know, in your audience is like super fit and really wants to take that up a notch, then my book 8 weeks to SEAL Fit is our training program, Navy SEAL's Unconventional Guide to Physical and Mental Training. And that was a New York Times bestseller, so it was pretty cool. A lot of people found that pretty useful. And so that's a good place to kind of start learning about the training model, which embeds, you know, CrossFit as well as strength and stamina development, endurance, durability, and mental toughness. So those are the six domains that we develop in that training program. But yeah, and so we also can, they can just send us an email at info@sealfit.com if they're looking for more, you know, specific information.
Outstanding. Well, fantastic stuff. I'll have links to all this stuff that Mark mentioned just here. So Mark Devine, everybody, check him out. His stuff is fantastic. Thanks for coming on the show, Mark. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Richard. It's been a pleasure. Take care.
Richard invites you to become a part of the Dose of Leadership community. Visit doseofleadership.com and sign up to receive his free Common Sense Leadership ebook, a guide that highlights how all of us can learn to become calm, confident, consistent, and courageous in all aspects of our lives. Richard is also available as a speaker for your next event. Richard specializes in practical leadership and change management. He has a philosophy of inspiring everyone to think and act like a leader, which is based on timeless natural principles and common sense. You can get more info by visiting doseofleadership.com.